Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
It's the Neverland Podcast, episode 116.
Up to Neverland!
Take a star to the right and stay until morning. Neverland!
Good morning, Neverland!
All right, take your pixie out of your pocket, get some of that pixie dust, and sprinkle yourself with it from that there pixie, because it's time to fly to Neverland, and I, of course, am your host, the Spider-Pan Jeremy, and with me again...
Heather, the Windy Nerd?
Yes, we are here again, and we've got so much stuff to put in here that... Let's see, we've got a visit to the trailer park, we've got some Neverland story time, we've got some audio from Disneyland that Lost Boy Eric has brought us, and then I have a wonderful conversation with Dale Wentland from the D-Cast. We might as well just get started right on here with a visit to the trailer park.
Mama, now the gator got in the house.
Now the gator? Give me that shovel. Come here.
Get him, Mom. Get that gator.
The Neverland Trailer Park.
Morning!
Pee-wee!
Hi, kids!
You're the sweetest boy in Fairville.
Morning, Pee-wee!
Morning, Pee-wee!
Don't you ever wonder what life is like outside Fairville?
Nope.
You know I don't want to go anywhere or try anything new.
Bye! French toast is up!
Cool.
What can I get you?
Milkshake, please.
Flavor?
Let's say chocolate.
3, 2, 1. Chocolate. Wow.
Thanks. You ever been in a fight?
No.
Broken a rule?
No.
You ever had two women fight over you?
Have I? No.
I think I know why you and I met. You're gonna leave Fairville. You're gonna take a holiday. You got a choice to make. Stick around here, or live a little.
Bingo!
My very first holiday is off to a perfect start!
The Jackers, where are you headed?
Drive, Pipsqueak.
Come on, let me go. Where are we?
The woods.
New York City.
Our village.
A snake farm.
Ah! Oh, you coming with us. This your lucky day.
Where should I sit?
By me.
Ow!
Say a few words, Pee-wee?
Encyclopedia? Pimple? And, hairball?
Amen!
L-A-T-T-I-H-T-B-D. Look at the time. I have to be going.
Okay, now this is different, because this is not actually going to be in theaters. Yeah, and... yeah.
Yes?
Looking at me doesn't translate into a podcast. But this will be on Netflix, March 18th. This is Pee-wee's big holiday. And you can't really call any of these Pee-wee Herman's movies sequels, because really Big Top Pee-wee is separate from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And really, with this, the way they were presenting it, you know, like Pee-wee has never left his town, never been in a fight. And when Pee-wee himself, Paul Reumans posted this to Facebook on the official Pee-wee fan page, somebody had mentioned, it's like, well, Pee-wee got in a fight with Francis. But, okay, you have to rule that out. That didn't actually happen because also in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, he did leave his hometown and went across America. So this is almost like finding a new way to do a similar movie with Pee-wee just going across America and having fun, different adventures in different situations.
Yep. I agree.
And nothing more to add.
Nope.
Wow, okay.
Well, I never saw Big Top Pee-wee.
Well, that doesn't matter.
I've seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure, though.
Yeah. Well, but rating on this trailer, though.
Yeah, it's kind of the same story, like you said, where he leaves and is thrown into some odd situations, and looks like the according to the trailer, the first thing is he's getting carjacked.
Yes, by a bunch of people robbing a bank, a bunch of women.
And it just kind of seems like it goes downhill from there, and then, yeah, you know, several different things that they throw in there, and that he's, you know, different kinds of people that he fell in with. And
yeah, and he always falls in with, like, some crazy people that you think he might be in trouble, but they end up really liking him, and then mm-hmm. they'll probably all show up in the end to help him out with whatever, you know, because there's probably something that, you know, other than meeting the guy on the motorcycle, which I swear he looks so familiar, I'm going to have to look up who that guy is.
Yeah, he did look familiar.
I cannot think where I've pictured him. He almost reminds me of the guy that was in Arrow that played Deathstroke, but not quite. I don't know if that's him or not.
I don't know.
He does remind me.
They grizzled him all up, so it's kind of hard to see, like, what's his face and what's, you know. I mean, he's the biker, so, yeah, you know.
But I'm kind of thinking, you know, he gets slightly inspired to take a trip from that guy, but, you know, I'm kind of wondering if there's something else he decides he wants to do, because he's headed for the Big Apple, according to the sticker on the back of his car.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's something he finds out that he really wants to go and do, and he finds the excuse to finally leave.
It's probably something silly, like the Big Apple is, like, really a Big Apple, or something, like he wants to go see. I mean, because that sounds very Pee-wee-ish. Let's go see.
It would be. He wants to actually find the world's biggest apple or something.
Yeah, or something like that.
That sounds more like Weird Al Yankovic with the biggest barrel of yarn in Minnesota.
Well, I mean, it wasn't in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. He wanted to go to the Alamo or something like that.
Yeah, well, no, he was looking for his bike.
Oh,
which he
that's
was told
what it was.
Was at the
yes.
Alamo.
Yes, okay.
I'm pretty sure no one's going to steal his bike this time.
No, because I don't even see him having a bike. Like, he had his little car.
Car. A very Mr. Bean kind of car.
Yes.
I got to say, it does remind me a little bit of a Mr. Bean's holiday sort of mm-hmm. thing, where he's just going to end up going into various situations, and him being Pee-wee, you're just going to see, you know, how he responds to all these different things. Living, you know, with Amish people, he's going to fall in with some guy out in the wilderness, and
there's an old lady on a skateboard.
Well, I think that's in town in Fairview, because you see her before. So, oh, you're just the sweetest, nicest person in town.
Well.
So, you know, we'll have some fun, I'm sure, in town mm-hmm. Before he gets out onto the road and has all these fun interactions. And you know, it would be fun if there's a few throwbacks to Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Maybe he runs into Large Marge again, or was that who it was on the truck?
Yeah. Get some platform shoes. Or
get some, some little throwbacks. Yeah. Maybe at one point have him on the bicycle just for fun. Because it looks like they really are trying to remind everybody of how much fun Pee-wee's Big Adventure is. Mm-hmm. And saying, well, here's a similar type of thing. And people seem to be getting really excited about this because he's in his 60s, I believe, now. And
you can kind of tell.
You can kind of tell. He's, you know, he can still pull off and everything. And he doesn't seem like he's aged a whole lot, but that's a lot of makeup. So.
Yes. Yes, that's when you realize he's always had a lot of makeup on to make it.
Yeah, for Pee-wee.
Yes, for Pee-wee's character.
But overall, very exciting. Looks like a lot of fun. This will not, like I said, be in theaters. This will be on Netflix. And though it's not a Disney movie, but it is Disney kind of fun, right?
Yes.
We think so. I think Pee-wee could make a Disney movie if he wanted to.
Probably.
So, I think he's probably voiced some characters if I looked it up. I bet he has, but I don't
know
for
sure.
Oh,
I'm sure he has.
He probably has.
He's done a lot of little things since, you know, the Pee-wee days that we remember a long time ago.
Yeah.
That were just little things here and there.
And appearing as Paul Reubens, you know, there was being the spleen. But that's what overall what we think of this trailer. And now I think it's time for a story.
This is your Neverland story time. You can listen along with your MP3 device. You will know it is time to listen when you hear the chime like this. Let's begin now.
This is a Disneyland original little long-playing record, and I am your story reader. I am going to begin now to read the story of Bedknobs and Broomsticks. You can read along with me in your book. You will know it is time to turn the page when Tinkerbell rings her little bells like this. Let's begin now. Eglantine Price was a most unusual lady. She lived in an old house overlooking the English Channel. Carrie Charles and Paul Rawlins, sent to board with her during the Second World War, weren't sure they wanted to stay. Miss Price had a strange hobby. She was taking lessons by mail on how to be a witch, hoping she could help England with her magic. The day the children arrived, she received her broomstick in the mail. Deciding to leave, the children were climbing out a second-story window when Miss Price came flying out of the house on her broomstick. It was a short ride. She landed with a crash. The next morning, Miss Price gave the children a magic bed knob. You turned it on the bedpost, said some special words, and the bed would take you where you wanted to go. When the last of the lessons on substitutory locomotion did not come in the mail, Miss Price decided to go to London and ask her teacher, Emilius Brown, what had happened. Everyone climbed on the bed, the magic words were said, and they were on their way. They found Emilius Brown selling magic tricks, horns and whistles. He told Miss Price he hadn't sent the last lesson because he didn't have it. Filigree, apogee, pedigree, perigree, said Miss Price. Professor Brown turned into a white rabbit. After she had changed him back, Emilius told Miss Price he had gotten the magic words from an old book in his house on the other side of London. He was surprised to find the spells worked and decided Miss Price must have some special powers. Using the travelling spell, they were soon airborne again, high over the roofs of London. The bed came to rest in front of Emilius's fine old abandoned townhouse. While he and Miss Price talked, the children explored. In the nursery, they found a crumpled linen book called The Isle of Naboombu. It had pictures of animals dressed like people. Then Emilius found the volume he was looking for. It was called The Spell of Astaroth. Several pages were missing, pages which contained the magic words Miss Price needed. The trail led to a bookstore on Portobello Road. The bookman had the missing pages, which said the words were engraved on a jewel, and that the jewel was on the Isle of Naboombu. When the bookman found Paul had a book about Naboombu, he tried to get it away from him. Just in time, they all climbed on the bed and took off for the island. Instead of landing on Naboombu itself, the bed came down in a lagoon and promptly sank to the bottom. A large bear, who happened to be fishing, pulled it out. He was about to throw everybody back in, but Paul demanded to see the king. The king had his own problems. His favourite soccer game was being postponed for lack of a referee. So Emilius volunteered. Many kinds of animals were playing. A hippo, a kangaroo, a cheetah, an ostrich, and an elephant made up the blue team. The king's team, the Dirty Yellows, included a rhino, a crocodile, a hyena, a warthog, and a gorilla. Luckily, the king's team won. Emilius got the magic jewel, but lost it on the way home. Then Miss Price found that the words she needed had been in Paul's book all along. She tried them first on Emilius's shoes, then Charlie's trousers, then her father's sword. And it worked. They came to life. Feeling his work was done, Emilia set off for the railroad station, only to find that it would be hours before the next train. Returning to the house, he discovered that Miss Price and the children had been captured by enemy soldiers and taken to an old museum. He changed himself into a rabbit with some difficulty, and followed. By the time he arrived at the museum, the spell had worn off. Miss Price told him some commandos were attacking the English coast. Looking at the armor in the museum, Emilius thought of a way to drive them off. They would use substitutionary locomotion. Miss Price said the magic words. Flags fluttered, drums began to beat, and trumpets played. The suits of armor came to life. Mounting her broomstick, Miss Price led her army forth. What a sight they made! The enemy fled in terror, and Miss Price had done her bit to save England.
Cosmic wizards of timeless times, teach my tongue the transcendental rhymes. Help my mind to find the skill. Give my heart the fervent will to summon substitutionary locomotion, mystic power that's far beyond the wildest notion. It's so weird, so feared, yet wonderful to see. Substitutionary locomotion, come to me. I don't want locomotionary substitution or remote intransitory convolution. Only one precise solution is the key. Substitutionary locomotion, it must be. Substitutionary locomotion can create a state of clamorous commotion. It's the spell to quell invasion from the sea. Substitutionary locomotion is the key to guide the tide that's stronger than the ocean. I want substitutionary locomotion. It can cause the force to keep our country free. Substitutionary locomotion, work for me.
You know where to go. Travel right here.
Okay, now we're going to have a special guest here, Mr. Dale Wendland from the D-Cast. We did record this before the Deadpool movie comes out, so I did want to kind of make you aware that we are going to mention he does ask me if I'm planning to see the Deadpool movie, and I was a little bit undecided. I figured I was probably going to see it, but I figured I'd go ahead and bring that up. That way you know that, yes, this is not quite exactly current. And if you wanted to see my review of the Deadpool film, it is at the news.neverlandpodcast.com. Or if you go to neverlandpodcast.com and click on the news thing there in the menu, you will be able to, of course, find our news page. There's been some other articles since my review of Deadpool, but you could track it down there if you are so inclined. But now, without further ado, let's hear what has been previously recorded.
To Disney and beyond.
All right, Neverlanders, it's time to further your education of the Marvel Universe, as well as the DC Universe, as we jump back into class. But this time, we've brought in somebody from the D-Cast. If you have not been listening to the D-Cast, I've mentioned them before, but we've brought... Now, I've got a theory on the D-Cast. The D-Cast is a D, not for Disney. No, it is the Dale Cast. So we have Dale that came in. Dale Wendland, welcome to Neverland.
Hey, thanks for having me.
But see, I'm right, isn't it? It's the Dale Cast.
No, it really isn't. Andy is the creator of the D-Cast, and I joined him, and then we became partners.
But you know it's the Dale Cast. It was meant for you. Andy knew you were coming.
He must have known.
But I thought it would be fun and interesting because you love to do like a lot of movie stuff, and you have some fun movie theories and stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk some of these movies that have come throughout history with DC and Marvel, and how they've kind of been in competition throughout on television and in movies, and, you know, look into the future of what's coming. A lot of exciting things to get into. But some of the earliest things that I know of that were created were these serials that, you know, these were done back in the movie theaters. You know, you'd go Saturday morning, you pay your nickel, and you could just sit in there and watch these. And they had a black and white Batman serial. And I think you had mentioned before, you have actually never seen any of these.
No, I know they exist, but I haven't seen them.
Oh, believe me.
Because they came out on DVD back in the day.
Yeah. I actually found those in a public library, and I checked them out thinking, wow, this is kind of neat. And I started watching, and I'm like, wow, this is kind of boring.
Yeah. Well, just the way the storytelling is, like, even nowadays, I find that some people think, like, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, a lot of the people that I try to show that to haven't seen that, or they've seen the other Indiana Jones movies. They think that is a slow episode, even though it's my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so I think it's just a different style of filmmaking.
Yeah, and I think because they were trying to stretch a story out over several, you know, episodes. But it's a very different style of Batman from back then. He, you know, the Batmobile was pretty much like just a sedan, you know.
they were driving around a normal car.
So yeah,
like a black car, but all the cars were black, so.
Yeah. Or they were sometimes white.
Yeah. But that's it.
And then you had a really terrible costume, and the bat ears were kind of crooked and weird, looked like weird stuffed pillows somebody stuck on somebody's head. But it was a start, and it was really, I think, breaking the ground to bring comic book characters into the cinema and also eventually on television. So you got to give DC some credit for getting that started, because I think they were probably more well known at the time, you know, for bringing Superman to television with George Reeves. Have you seen any of those?
Well, I've seen bits and pieces of them, yeah, but, you know, I was born in 1985, so...
Oh, you're a youngin'.
You know, so, like, I've seen them, and I've watched, like, bits and pieces. I used to watch the Batman TV show a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah, there we go.
But, yeah, George Reeves is even too far back for me.
That's too far back for me, really, but I remember Nick and Knight, when they started showing it, I would try to watch them, and I appreciate the effort they put into the costume, but it looked like he was wearing a pair of thin sweats.
Yeah.
And they'd have like a thin paper wall, and he'd jump through it and get into his hands and his hip, that Superman pose that the bad guys would shoot, and they would have these little sparks that they would kind of draw on him, and everything's like, bing, 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 you know. And
then he would duck when the gun was thrown at him.
Yeah. So, but
because
it's still...
Because the gun was a real prop, and he couldn't get hit by it.
Right. But once again, you know, it's bringing superheroes to TV. And, you know, Shazam eventually even had a television show, I guess, at some point, which, well, of course, I think he was known as Captain Marvel at the time, but he got well known as Shazam. And he wasn't quite part of the DC universe, was then brought in. But as you had mentioned now, the one that I remember seeing, because they put it on syndication, I remember here in Kansas City, which you're way up there in Canada. They started like...
Not actually up, but yeah.
Well, north, you know. But they started showing... Let's see, He-Man was at 4:30 in the afternoon. And then at 5 o'clock, Batman would come on. And they actually made us wait with the 60s series. They would actually have one episode, you know, because now if you catch it on TV, they're going to show a back-to-back episode, so you get to see both parts. But we actually had to wait till the following day. And if you went till Friday and you had the cliffhanger episode on Friday, you had to wait until Monday to see how Batman was going to get out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, my big introduction into Batman was the Tim Burton movies and then the animated series that followed.
Oh, yes. Which we'll catch up to that. We got a long way to go. So, but you have seen at least some of the 60s Batman, I guess, then later on, right?
Oh, yeah. Like everything and all in the movie.
Oh, yes. We actually watched that in my middle school. We used to, when we would be going on like Christmas vacation or spring break or whatever, they would bring an old film strip movie and we'd all go into the auditorium and watch it. And that was actually one of the films we got to watch was the old Batman movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this was around in 89, so you had like the Tim Burton was popular, the Tim Burton one, and then they bring in this one because I thought, well, we can show them this, and it was kid-friendly enough. Although we got middle schoolers, and anytime he started kissing on Lee Merriweather, was Catwoman in that
one? Yes, yeah, she's so beautiful in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was going, woo, whenever they started kissing or something. Yes, we were real mature in middle school, we are. But that was actually the Batman I grew up watching. That and have you ever seen any of the old Super Friends cartoons?
Yep, yep.
Oh, good. I was about to say, you're going to make me feel old if you've never even seen those.
Well, I've seen them, like, you know, but the Cartoon Network, or Teletoon, actually, from us up here, they would play them with the Spider-Man cartoon as well. Which that Spider-Man cartoon is a disaster.
Which one?
The original Spider-Man cartoon, the Spider-Man.
Oh, the 60s one. Never
a Spider-Can. Because the amount of backgrounds that they reused for any one shot was just it must have taken them, you know, days and days to make the backgrounds, and then they just must have taken 10 minutes to make an episode. Because, they just threw those backgrounds repeated. Like, when he was swinging, there was three motions. There's only three animations of him swinging. And then it's just a different background that's repeated.
Yeah, I couldn't help but love it, though, because I'm a huge Spider-Man junkie. So it was still fun to watch, as bad as it was.
Oh, yeah, I still watched it.
Yep. also, at the time, Marvel had those... I think they had an entire hour program or something, because I found the theme songs for the Marvel superheroes have arrived, and it had a Captain America, a Thor, a Submariner, and a Hulk short cartoon. And golly, I don't remember how long it must have been. The 90s. I started finding on video at the library. They had some of these cartoons, and this is where it was they would draw or take a frame from a comic book, and then one part would move, the arm might lift.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's freeze frames, and then to have dialogue in the mouth might be moving to the dialogue.
Yeah, it's come a long way. I still think comic books on television are not very good, though.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think they've ever done it properly.
Wow. Okay, we're going to get to that, because I want to hear your thoughts on that, but we got to work our way up.
Sure.
So the Super Friends, between... the 60s Batman that I was watching, the live action, and the Super Friends version of Batman, I will say when it got to the 1989 and I saw the first commercials on television for the Tim Burton Batman, I was completely thrown. This was Batman as I had never seen him, and I didn't even recognize it. And I was like, what is that?
Had you never read The Dark Knight Returns?
No, I was more of a Marvel type of guy.
Oh.
And a lot of my, when I was a kid, a lot of my comic reading was I had to borrow it from somebody.
For sure. Yep. Or find it in a forest.
Or find it in a forest. I mean, now you got it easy. You can go to the library if you want to go and get a collection of things. You can read up and catch up on things. But I think I mainly, because I did love Batman after the 89 movie, but I had started a lot with Marvel, because this is also going to be probably a bit before your time, but on Saturday morning cartoons, we had a Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which I just absolutely loved it. And I still love to watch it. It's really bad, but I still love watching it.
No, it's good. It was good.
Yeah, it was a pretty good show. And then about a season or so into that, and before that, there had been a Spider-Man cartoon, which I didn't know about until it was on Netflix for a little while. But they had an Incredible Hulk cartoon, which this was different from me.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Well, see, the weird thing
Dr.
is...
Dr. Bruce Banner, pelted by gamma rays, now he turned into the Hulk, isn't he gamma rays? That doesn't even make sense.
That's from the 60s one, though. This is in the 80s.
Oh, the 80s.
Yes, the 80s had an Incredible Hulk cartoon, which was weird for me, because I remember when I was a little kid, and this is probably still before your time, but I loved the Dukes of Hazzard as a kid.
Love Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, it was great. I loved it. I didn't understand it. I just cars and jumping. Woo, you know.
Yeah.
But in order to watch Dukes of Hazzard, The Incredible Hulk came on first on CBS.
Yeah.
And my family would want to watch The Incredible Hulk, but it scared the bejeebers out of me.
And was it the cartoon or the live action?
This is a live action Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, the Hulk. Lou Ferrigno. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, again, you know. they're starting to get better around that time, but still, there's just like a total misunderstanding of the characters and what they're supposed to be in the metaphor.
Yeah.
Like, I just think, I suffered through Smallville as a teenager, and I love Superman is my guy and was my guy for a really long time, but, that's like, and anyone who likes talks about Arrow, and I've watched Arrow, it's Smallville. Like, all the CW stuff is Smallville. It's the same format. They do the Monster of the Week episodes, and they do, and it's like the, you have like a, hey, there's that popular like movie style now out, or that there's like a really popular show. We'll do an episode like that show. And it's just so like formulaic. Its continuity is such a mess. Like, the thing about comic books that are good in their own contained continuity storylines, and yes, they have to reboot them all the time, is the arc in itself and the build up towards something and the intrigue. There's always intrigue in comic books. There's always like a mystery, and it just doesn't translate into television, or they haven't done it properly, or they like do things like X-Men, like, when the first X-Men movie came out, everyone was like, oh, that was like, this is the best we've ever seen. And it was the best we've ever seen, but it's not a very good movie.
Yeah.
And the thing is, X-Men doesn't work as a movie. X-Men works as a television show. It's an ensemble. It's just like, there's so many characters, but you have to have those characters to make it the X-Men.
Otherwise, you make a series of Wolverine movies with occasional other mutants.
Exactly. You know, and that's the thing. I think Man of Steel in a lot of ways got Superman almost the way he's supposed to be. But then the Lex Luthor that they have, like, not the actor, but I can just tell, like, the way they're portraying him, and they might show me wrong, but the best Lex Luthor is supposed to be the Lex Luthor you agree with to the very end. You're like, oh, he has a really good point. They're, you know, we are destroying the Earth. Like, that would be his angle now. We're destroying the Earth. You know, like, humans are destroying the Earth. We're waiting for something to come save us. And Superman is a symbolism of that, wanting us to, someone else to come save us. We need to save the Earth. We need to do this. And you're like, oh, I agree with Lex Luthor. I agree with Lex Luthor. And then you're like, what's he going to do? And then it's always like, so what I plan is we kill 2/3 of the world's humans. And you're like, ah, that's not a good idea. You know, like, that is, that's your Lex Luthor. But they always, like in the movies, with Christopher Reeves, he was a realist. Like, it was real estate scams.
Yeah.
It was all real estate scams, and then Superman Returns, it was another real estate scam.
Yeah.
Real estate scam. And then, you know, so They just don't get it right. They just they make the characters whatever they want to make them, and they just don't translate it properly.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's been weird. It's like, okay, you know, DC has had whatever this deal is with Warner Brothers for so long. And they made, and I still love the old Christopher Reeve Superman movies. I mean, even though, you know, they did have a weird Lex Luthor, but Gene Hackman was incredibly entertaining as their version of a Lex Luthor, even if it was really off. I think they were afraid back then to really step up. I don't know if they thought audience would really have taken to the Lex Luthor that had this obsession with destroying Superman because, and I, at least they did have the line of, you know, that, you know, he's like this god that doesn't share his power with the rest of us and stuff like that. You know, that there's like a jealousy that Lex Luthor kind of has.
Yeah. No, and they've started to introduce that into him. Yeah. But it's not even like a jealousy. It's a fear. It's like a, Superman will make humans not become better. And that's what Lex Luthor is afraid about. Mm. You know, that's what he's afraid of. He's afraid of the superheroes making humans feel less when humans should, if they fight for themselves or if they do it themselves, will become better. He has a noble cause. He just is a psycho. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
psycho is a word used for little like minds that don't understand.
He's not like the Joker. The Joker has a chaotic cause. He doesn't believe himself to truly be the good guy. But Lex Luthor does, and there should be an aspect of us that agrees with him and sympathizes with that plight and put ourselves in that shoes. If there was Superman that showed up all of a sudden in our world, people would be so resistant to it, but it would represent a lot of different things, and that it's supposed to be a metaphor, and they just don't play it as a metaphor enough. Like they play it as like a real story, they play it like it's about a superhero fighting bad guys.
Yeah,
and it isn't. The only things that ever come close to representing the comics are the animated cartoons. The DC animated movies are fantastic. Batman the Animated Series, Batman Beyond, you know, the Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, Young Justice. Marvel has not been very good. Like, X-Men was okay. It was good in the day, but if you watch it again, it's not. It's
the animation. You mean the animated series from the
90s? Yeah. Yeah. X-Men, like, it's a good one. It's a good cartoon. It's
very good. I loved it.
Yeah. No, I know. Loving it and it being good or holding up to time are two different things, right? I loved it as well, and I've watched it again recently and loved it. But, you know, it wasn't – the animation's not that great often.
Yeah. Yeah. Until, oh golly, what was it about? I think it was around about the third season that you suddenly they wanted to show one in prime time, and it was Wolverine and Jubilee and I think Gambit going down into the sewers where they had Lady Deathstrike.
Yeah, yeah.
Like suddenly we had really good animation for like a couple episodes.
Yeah, that was I remember that. And then
it just kind of went back to its normal.
but even then, like their far away shots, people have like weird gray, like fully gray square legs and stuff like that. But I just don't know what it is about why it has to be a cartoon for the story to be similar to a comic book.
I think it comes back to having the courage to completely tell the story. And I think that's where the game has really changed, because when you look at the past Marvel attempts at television, you know, you watch the old Incredible Hulk television series, and you watch it now, and he's really not that incredible. He's not bulletproof, for one, and, you know, he does some pretty good feats of strength, but nowhere near the level of what Hulk is supposed to be capable of. And then if you see the old – there was a live-action Spider-Man series that it took him forever to climb a wall. He might
– Oh, yeah, that thing. Yeah.
Oh, and then you see the old Captain America they tried to do where he's got a big motorcycle helmet and tights. And, it was so bad.
That 90s Spider-Man cartoon was really good.
Yes. Oh, I love that one.
And like quality-wise, that was more consistent and better than X-Men, like just for the level of quality.
Yeah, especially once again, the pilot episode, if you look at that, the animation is so smooth and so tight. And then you get when they, you know, they get to the regular series, like the animation kind of fell off a little bit, but it was still good.
Yeah.
But I think with movies, how they were afraid to take the risk, because you watch, you know, The Incredible Hulk television series or the old Spider-Man television, they never fought any of the supervillains. And no. It seems like Marvel didn't really take that first step until, well, I mean, granted, you have Spider-Man, but it almost was that formula of comic book movies that, oh, well, the villain will die by the end of the movie. You know, we don't keep villains around.
Well, and the great thing about the 90s cartoons, the great thing about the 90s cartoons was they based all their episodes off of story arcs in the comic books.
Yes.
And, like, so it would be, like, a six-part, you know, which made it impossible to watch in those days because you're like, oh, I haven't seen part three yet or whatever, right? And it's part nine for some reason.
Yeah,
and
series, they actually had a couple episodes that actually got flopped out of order in the first season.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think the movies have in a lot of ways, the movies are almost starting to get better than the comic books.
Yeah, see, because I think they finally, mainly when it hit to the Avengers – They went ahead and said, you know what? Aliens. We don't care. Aliens are going to come down and invade New York, and we're going to make it work.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens.
That's
exactly, they haven't got it all right.
But brought to life, and it finally, it's opened the floodgates of saying, hey, you know what? We can do some of these over the top and big stories and have it actually mean something. And I think that's exactly why they finally got the courage to do something off the wall like Guardians of the Galaxy and found a way to make it work where everybody was going to love it because it's relatable, even if it's kind of that silly nonsense. You know, you got a talking tree that can only say, I am Groot.
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, I don't really class it as a comic book movie, and like the comic book is the source material, but that's like saying The Fountain is the comic book movie, you know, just because the original source was a comic book. I think that when we talk about comic book movies, we specifically are talking about superhero, and I just feel I think that Marvel did it perfectly up until Ultron 2. Ultron, because
Avengers, Age of Ultron.
That movie is not good.
Really? And I liked it.
Well, I'll tell you why you're wrong.
It wasn't as good as the first one, that's
I'll tell you what's wrong about it. Is first off, the best fight in the whole thing happens in the halfway mark. Hulk versus Iron Man. So the whole thing is a downhill from there. Ultron was just such a poorly executed villain that Ultron, like, it needed to be something that Tony Stark had been working on that they hinted at earlier on, but because they shoehorned in the villain, they couldn't do that. The another huge problem is what was great about the Avengers is it was a bunch of individual movies leading up to one big movie. Avengers 2 is a movie that is setting up other movies, which is a terrible, terrible thing to do, and we're going to find out that DC might do a better version of it, but it is a bad idea, because when you have Captain America, you give Captain America character and development. When you have Captain America in the Avengers, he has to compete with everybody else. But if you have those movies leading up and then have them in the Avengers, it's okay. You forego need of character development because it's all about a big fight scene and a big battle, which should have been leading up the whole time. The problem with Avengers is it's self-contained, Avengers 2, it's self-contained because it's leading into other movies, which hopefully will pay off in the end. But why does the Hulk jump into the put himself in a thing in the ocean when you could have had him trying to stop the land from falling out of the sky and under all the weight, and he's just like screaming, getting crushed under it, and he slows it down enough where it doesn't destroy everything around it, but that he gets like lost and killed or whatever, and we don't know what happens to him. You have the exact same end moment that you want with a shoehorned relationship of Scarlett Johansson and Black Widow and the Hulk, and he also is a hero. He has a heroic moment, which is the Hulk is that's what the Hulk does. That's a Hulk. I don't know how they didn't see a chunk of land in the sky, not the perfect Hulk moment. And it bothers me. It bothers me to the point that these little subtle changes in that movie, they could have made actual character development, and it could have made sense. Like, the Hulk doing what he did made no sense, and it was just it added on time into the movie, and it was just lazy because it wasn't part of their focus. Yeah, well, because it you get the same result at the end, but he's a hero.
Yeah, he gets to go out big. It's because as it was more, I've got to leave because I've seen how dangerous I can be. And you're still playing in that fear of the Hulk being like he's afraid he's going to hurt somebody.
Yeah, you get zero character development.
Yeah.
and that's the thing is Planet Hulk, I think, will be a fantastic movie. But that whole movie is based on that. You know, like he's smarter when he's on Planet Hulk. And basically the Avengers, the Illuminati, really, but it consists of most of the Avengers people. They sent Hulk away because they're tired of dealing with him. And he, you know, he's on this planet and it's basically John Carter of Mars.
I think I saw the animated version of Planet Hulk. I don't know how true
the animated is. It's pretty much the same, except for the planet blows up.
Ah.
And then it's Hulk just jumping towards like this back to Earth as the planet blows up.
Oh my gosh.
Because comic books are better that way. Yeah. They're like, yeah, just blow it up. We'll retcon it later.
That is something I would like to see them work on because, you know, I got used to when I started actually looking at the Hulk popping up in various different comics, he had kind of merged more. You know, he'd had his Gray Hulk period where he was more intelligent, and then he'd become a Green Hulk where he really didn't ever change back to Bruce. But he was an intelligent Hulk, and he could hold a full conversation, and he still had Bruce Banner's brains, kind of.
Yes, and that's what you need because, like, you can't have a story about Bruce Banner because Bruce Banner is supposed to be the most boring guy in the world.
Right?
Like, that's the shtick. Like, that's why the first Hulk movie didn't work because it did focus on Bruce Banner, and it was like, hey, this is boring because he's boring. That's the point. The point, right? Like, and the thing with Hulk is that he's infinitely strong.
Right.
The more you hurt him and the more upset he gets, the stronger he is. And I felt like, one, they showed Hulk being weak against Iron Man in that movie, in Age of Ultron 2, by losing. And then they don't show him being strong again. Like, they just show him being weak again. I don't know why they're nerfing his strength. Like, he's supposed to be infinitely strong, but, like, not always available because he's unpredictable.
Yeah. Well, I think part of their angle there with the Hulkbuster armor is if Bruce is supposed to have helped design this, perhaps Bruce knew a way that he could actually be subdued as the Hulk. So maybe you could use that as the justification of why Iron Man is able to finally subdue him in the Hulkbuster armor, because that was the entire intention of that, is to finally find something that could stop him.
Why is there not like sleeping gas that the suit emits? Then.
Yeah, that's stuff I had wondered about too. Is like, you probably couldn't pierce his skin to drug him, but could you gas him?
Sure,
with something and knock him out. But it was more interesting watching the fist thing going through. It's like, go to sleep, go to sleep, go to sleep. Yeah. It was very entertaining that way.
Of course, and I loved that scene. Yeah. And then there's an hour left in the movie.
Yeah.
And
I think, you know, as you were mentioning, it's like that's the big fight. And then it kind of comes down because you got to look at it. The Avengers are not always about the fight, although there is a pretty good fight there at the end. I did enjoy it, but it's more of a rescue mission. They're trying to get the people off of the city. And I think that's one of the things that's the Marvel movies going back to even the 2001 Spider-Man. I think they took a note from the old Christopher Reeve Superman where you actually get to see him, you know, save somebody, be a hero, because you never saw Batman other than the animated series. But Batman in the movies, like the Tim Burton ones, he's a hero in the fact that he stopped these evil people from doing more harm, but he doesn't necessarily come to the rescue like Superman or Spider-Man or the Avengers, where you get to see them coming and defending people and protecting
people. Sure, yeah.
That's what makes them more feel like a hero, and that's where people get behind. It's something I'm really glad they brought back with the Spider-Man movies, is him coming to the rescue and, you know, getting kids out of the way of a truck in the second Spider-Man movie. Stuff totally. Like that. That's the stuff I love seeing in a good superhero movie, is, you know, coming to the rescue once in a while.
I actually liked The Amazing Spider-Man number one.
Yeah.
Because I felt that every time they had one of those like cliche moments where it's like, if he would just tell the girl the truth, the problem would be over. They did. They would do it. Mm-hmm. And I really liked the movie for that reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it didn't give itself like false conflict. But then 2 just was,
Like 2, but it might be just because I just love Spider-Man so much that I was willing to accept it. Because I even though the worst Spider-Man movie was definitely Spider-Man 3, I still have a little part of me that can watch it.
It's all producers' kind of fault. You can tell it. It's that movie is like, you could just tell like producers got over involved in that movie.
Well, yeah.
It's supposed to be the Vulture originally.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that. And they were still talking about doing that for a fourth one. And you know, Sam Raimi was really kind of caving because everybody was crying out for a Venom. And he was not a fan of Venom. And so he kind of read up and he found an angle where he thought he could do it. And I have the novelization. Sam Raimi wrote that with one of his brothers. And they just did their own version of Venom instead of going with what they could use from the comics to make Venom interesting. And there was a lot of Spider-Man fans, and I kind of tend to agree with this, thinking, you know, you could have given Eddie Brock's story and built that up at the end and then had Venom in his own movie later. Is that way you could really, if you wanted to develop the character that far, because you could, that way you get to spend a movie maybe with Peter in the black costume and learning lessons of, wow, this thing is really doing horrible things to me. And still go with that. And then if you take out the whole concept of, oh, we decided the Sandman now is going to be the guy who actually shot your uncle. That, no, don't change the origin story of Spider-Man. Silly.
What's the point? That just tells me that you didn't have a reason to have this bad guy.
Yeah, you just didn't have a reason. And you know, Thomas Hayden Church, I thought he was great.
Yeah.
And there is
I like Topher.
Yeah.
I like Topher Grace too. I don't think it was the right character for him, but like I like Topher Grace.
He's a good actor, but maybe this wasn't the perfect role for him. But I think they were trying too hard to make Eddie Brock a mirror image of Peter Parker in some fashion. Like he was an opposite of Peter Parker.
100% overconfident.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were, but they failed in that. But
boy,
you know,
did they ever fail in
that. Are you going to go see the Deadpool movie?
Yeah, I think I'm going to try to go hit it. I usually don't do R-rated movies myself, but
really?
I because what you put into your brain comes out, and so I'm careful what I feed myself because I, you know.
Here it's 14A.
Oh, it's really? Well, that's, I guess that's helpful. Well, I don't know.
We have a different rating system. We have G, PG, 14A. 18A.
Huh. So it might not be that bad. So, but I do plan, I'm going to check it out because, you know, I'm not a big Deadpool fan, but I do have some comics like during the Civil War. And he's a really funny character. And so I'm thinking, well, this could be a lot of fun to go. So
Deadpool, a really great introduction to Deadpool is the Messiah Complex series.
I've heard of that.
He shows up later. And I think in the second, because there's three parts to it. And it's about Cable traveling through time, and they end up running into to Deadpool at the end of the end of the universe. It's pretty like Deadpool when he I don't know. I think this is gonna hopefully be really good, and you will get a Deadpool 2, and then hopefully X-Force. I think
I know Ryan Reynolds really wants to get an X-Force going, which I'd love to see Cable and Deadpool in a movie together.
Yeah, that was the – I heard that's the plan for 2, and then 3 should be X-Force.
Yeah. Unfortunately, because it's R-rated, I can't give it a full review here on the Neverland podcast after I see it because, you know, I try to keep family-friendly and try to recommend family-friendly things. But I'm going to go check it out at least myself because I am curious enough to check it out. And I love the fact that they brought Colossus in because since they've – within the X-Men films, they've teased a little – you get a little bit of Colossus, a little bit of Colossus. I want to see some full-on Colossus stuff because he's a really good character.
Yeah. Remember in the video game, I always used Colossus, that arcade video game, the X-Men arcade video game?
Yes. They came up with some really ridiculous powers for everybody to have. Like Wolverine had his weird claw lasers. And the one problem I had with some of the powers on the arcade game, since we're jumping everywhere, is Cyclops' eye beam would be like this tiny little blast. It was like, you know, it should be this big, boom, you know, big beam that goes across the screen, but it was always this little pew.
Well, he can control it, right?
Yeah.
And that's all the visor does. It's like a filter.
Yeah. But, you know, if it's supposed to be like your special move and it's going to actually cost you a something in the game,
yes,
it needs
right.
to be this big kaboom.
It should be like a screen clearing one.
Yes. Just let him just unleash. Because Cyclops is always one of my, pretty much my favorite X-Men. Because I've always been drawn to the characters that they take a responsibility
the captain?
For what they're doing. Yes. I love
you Captain. You liked Leonardo?
Leonardo of the Turtle. Okay, I had to catch up where we're at because my brain
is Leonardo and Cyclops are like the same character.
Yeah, yeah. And so I always kind of like that. I think I, you know, that Boy Scout complex maybe that I have in my head of, you know, always trying to do the right thing, be responsible, which is probably why I love Spider-Man so much. One of the reasons.
I agree with you. Like, I was a big Leonardo. Like, I liked all the Turtles, but
But always but loved Leonardo.
For me, I hated say Cyclops because he was getting in the way of Wolverine.
That doesn't surprise me. There's
Wolverine's the best Canadian superhero of all time, and he's in the way. You know?
I see what it is. It's the Canada connection.
Well, and he's just the coolest.
Yeah, Wolverine's cool, but I can get tired of him pretty quick because really, he's kind of a jerk.
It's all how he's portrayed. Like, yeah, I like true. The thing is, I like Hugh Jackman and stuff, but he's never portrayed Wolverine properly.
Yeah, he shouldn't be this tall, good looking guy. Because he really, when you see him in the comics, he's short. He's got really weird hair. He looks like this 80-year-old man. He looks like dried bacon, you know.
everyone points to the height and stuff. I don't really care about that as much as more like actually how he portrays the character and the way he portrays the character. He like makes him goofy or like he like cracks wise all the time. Like he like does like, but like. It's the wrong kind of Kraken wise. You know, a good thing to do is watch, if you like read some Wolverine comics or, you know, not even the 90s cartoon, because that's not even quite right, but he's more like Worf, where Worf is a very funny character in Star Trek, but he's not like cracking jokes all the time. He's funny because of his environment.
Yeah.
And that's how Wolverine is supposed to be. You know, there's supposed to be funny moments because he's so serious, not because he like made a joke about him being a can opener and you're a tin can or something. You know, like they just don't portray it correctly.
Which is one of the things I thought was so fun with the Ultimate Spider-Man comics. They had for a while Wolverine had gotten all shot up in like a diner and everything, and then Spider-Man. I called it Spider-Boy because it was very much going back to a teenage Spider-Man. But it has Spider-Man actually trying to work with Wolverine, and the typical, you know, Spider-Man banter. And he when he gets nervous, he cracks a joke. That's how he deals with being in life-threatening situations.
Yeah.
So you got that, and you've got
they're always great together. Yeah.
Because Wolverine, as you say, is always just very, very serious and like, yeah, kid, you're gonna just get in my way. It's great stuff.
Do you watch the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon?
I tried.
It's really good. It like doesn't start off very good, and they kind of mess around with the Venom thing, which is fine. It's good, but I think because basically what they did with Spider-Man, and that's how I think this is how they're going to portray him in the movies.
Oh, please no.
Well, no, he's Deadpool for kids.
Yeah, that's I think the problem I've had with Ultimate Spider-Man is they played so much to kids that I couldn't enjoy it. And
I don't know. I've been really enjoying it. They
made him too silly, and because I loved like the 90s series that we were talking about before.
He body swaps with Wolverine in it and stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
That was like, fun because I did watch for a while, but it's gotten so silly, and they went Web Warriors, and
I loved Web Warriors.
You got too many cooks in the pot. So, yeah,
Spider-Ham?
Having him as part of a team where they put him with, you know, just racially to introduce characters, but having like Iron Fist and Pyro Man,
but that's what's going to happen. Like this, the thing is, like the whole thing is that they're going to make him this type of Spider-Man.
Yeah,
and you know what I mean. Like
I like him better on his own with occasional team ups. I'm part of this whole team now because it part of what makes Spider-Man interesting is it's a guy trying to have a normal life but also having this responsibility as Spider-Man.
Of course.
And the 90s series had that respect of him always having, you know, his normal life, and I loved the Spectacular Spider-Man. That was such a great show. It was so short-lived. It was very sad, but I love the way they presented everything and the characters. And
yeah, Spectacular Spider-Man was really good. It was a shame that it ended.
It was so good. For anyone who hasn't heard me talk to Greg Weisman, who was one of the creators of Gargoyles, he also was a producer on that show, and we did talk about that a bit.
Love Gargoyles. Oh.
Gargoyles was so good. But
is Gargoyles Disney property?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. Why don't they do something with that? My whole thing is I want them to turn Toontown into 90s cartoon land, basically.
Yeah, I was just actually hearing your show for this week, I think yesterday.
Yeah, when I was talking to Fresh Baked
Disney. Yes, yeah. Great channel, by the way. You've also mentioned 360-degree attractions or whatever it is. SoCal Attractions.
Yeah, SoCal Attractions.
I do love watching their videos, by the way. Great videos. I'm thinking about talking to some of these video makers and see if they will let me use their sound on the show, just, you know, have the sound of the rides because I can't quite get all of them covered and you know, give him a little plug. So I might partner with one of these video makers because they're doing such great stuff.
Oh, great stuff.
I'm losing my track of where my train of thought was going.
From like we're just talking about movies, TVs, yep. comic books.
But that's the problem I've had with Ultimate Spider-Man. I was like, yay, cool, another Spider-Man series. And at that time, I had really enjoyed Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes. I love the way they handled the Avengers in that. It was great. So I was really excited about it. But then when I started watching Ultimate Spider-Man, and it seemed they were being as silly as they could be with Spider-Man, not really dealing with the fact that he's got to have a normal life that he's trying to maintain, but they made it just this team thing. And I slowly lost interest in it. And I was actually, when Disney Infinity, when they came around with Spider-Man, that they based it around that series, I was kind of disappointed. I was like, I'd want more, you know, the Spider-Man that I grew up loving.
Yeah. I agree with you. Like, I think College Spider-Man is better. I do. Yeah. Like, I totally agree with you. But if I'm not going to get that, then
I'll take what I can get, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why I'm still excited to have Spider-Man as part of the Marvel Universe, but I'm tired of him going back and making him a teenager every time.
I know, but I feel like we have our adult superheroes, and it's okay that he is a teenager. You know, and like they don't take those college versions of him away from us. Yeah, so
we always have it to go back to.
And like my 4-year-old watches the Ultimate Spider-Man. That's kind of why I watch it, and I don't know. I think it plays well to him, you know. And I think
for the younger audiences, I think they've got a great show. But for the older people like us, maybe not so much.
But what they've hit on is that children this age love commentary right now.
Yeah,
and because he's cracking. He always did this. He cracked jokes and he commented on what was happening. But now he's more commenting to the reader or the watcher. And that's why I say, like, they've turned him into, like, Spider-Man is kid Deadpool now.
Yeah.
Because he breaks the fourth wall. And, you know, like, they'll change his animation style when he has, like, a cold or whatever. And
yeah.
But, like, it just speaks to the YouTube generation the way we're going. And so I have no problem with them modernizing, they've changed who Captain America is, and they've changed who Thor is. And, that's what comics are supposed to do. Comics are supposed to be a reflection of our society, and we use those metaphors to learn lessons and hopefully grow and improve from them, you know? Yeah. And I feel like that has to be in it. And that's the one thing, is I do feel like the movies at times lose that a little bit. And they tried with Age of Ultron, but I think it'll hit more of a note with Civil War. Civil War, I'm very excited for. It's going to be really, really good. And Civil War was one of my favorite Marvel series comic books.
Yeah. Although that was a downhill slide for Spider-Man to me.
I don't know if people are prepared. Well, they're not going to do that, though. They're not going to do the reveal. They already said.
Because it was so interesting.
I thought Iron Spider was a cool suit.
Yes, so. It was. Definitely. That was the beginning of, granted, it was interesting, to see, he basically broke his rule of, I have to be able to keep everybody safe by not revealing and showing everybody put in danger. And then, of course, because they had made that grand mistake of having him reveal himself, they made a bigger mistake in wiping out all kinds of continuity of him being married. And then they decided, they break it some more by having him swap with Dr. Octopus. And I know a lot of people enjoyed it, but I was irritated with that idea. And now they've even really messed it up by turning him into Tony Stark.
I like Superior Spider-Man.
I know a lot of
people. Yeah, but yes, he is Tony Stark now. I got bored of them. I liked them to start off with, but I got bored of them. The Doctor Strange comics right now are phenomenal, though.
Yeah, if anyone has, I think I need to look into
it. They're only 5 issues in. They are so good, and they'll make you so excited for the movies.
Just in case that wasn't already.
Yeah. Well, but it might give you some more context to enjoy the movie. But Civil War is going to be good. I just don't know if people are prepared to have Tony Stark be the bad guy. And
unless they actually agree with some of the things he does.
Well, yeah, then they might.
That is one thing with the Marvel Civil War that I liked about it is if you saw how it started, you could understand Tony Stark's point of view.
Well, you can understand his point of view, but understanding someone's point of view usually still means you think they're wrong.
But I totally understood.
And your wife's I understand your point of view, but do the dishes.
Yeah, the problem with the registration is that it was going to literally have to be having enforced like that. to where, oh, if you're not going to comply with it, we're going to go after it and have to lock you up in something. That's where they really went wrong. But having the idea of like, hey, you know, maybe we should have and encourage you to train to make sure you are fully prepared to go out there and do your superhero stuff and maybe not have this much of a level of an accident that wiped out an entire school.
And that's where I think Spider-Man fits in again, right? That Ultimate Spider-Man is all about him training young heroes to be better, right? Sure.
You can look at it that way.
Yeah. But that's kind of how I see how he might fit in, where he can be that like example for young people to, because we're not going to exist in a, it's not going to like, there's going to be no registration or something. There's, you know, there's going to be something that, and there's no Iron Man movies coming out. So Tony Stark might end up like still, there might be, you might have your different Avenger movies.
Yeah, I'm thinking some West Coast Avengers is getting started. So, but we probably better wrap this up. We've been going a long time. Oh my, I'm sure we could keep going for another hours if we had that kind of time, but unfortunately we don't.
No, I wish I could. I you know what? I'll make an effort to come back on, and I'll make sure to not derail you next time. And we'll plan a time where I can don't have to go make dinner quickly.
Oh well, we can chase rabbits all day if we want to. That's fine, you know. Yeah. Okay, but once again, you can be found at DCast, and your website is thedcast.com, correct?
Yeah, so you can I'm Dale Wentland, DaleWentland, at Dale Wentland on the Twittergram, on Instagram and the tweets, and it's the DCast, at the DCast on Twitter, thedcast.com is our website and our YouTube channel, and we put out a podcast every Monday. We just had Fresh Baked on. We've interviewed Super Carlin Brothers twice. We've had one half of Thingamavlogs, Leo and Sarah. And then we usually talk about what's happening on the YouTube world, but mostly focused on Disney, Marvel, Star Wars, and Pixar movies. And me and Andy, we talk basically like this for about an hour.
Yeah. So pretty much if you enjoy the Neverland podcast, you're going to like them too, because we do a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
We love the same stuff. I occasionally cheat and go and talk about He-Man or something too.
Yeah, yeah. I get in trouble every time I do that. I brought up One Punch Man, and it got Andy was like, well, so what do you mean? Like, it's a comic book? I'm like, no, it's a manga. And an animated TV show. It's 12 episodes. But anyways, anyone's listening, they should go watch One Punch Man because it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go check that out just because I'm sure I probably would like it. It just sounds fun. One Punch Man.
Oh, it's great. It's great for people who love anime and great for people who don't like anime. And Leo Camacho and I talk about it on Twitter sometimes when we're watching it.
Okay. Okay. I almost forgot, though, before we sign off, because you love to do movie theories.
Yeah.
I have now determined, because Marvel is printing Star Wars comics, that the Star Wars universe is now part of the Marvel universe, at least in the cinematic universe, and I guess part of the Marvel universe in comics as well, because they have the comics. But it happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, so maybe it didn't interact so much, except for perhaps the building of Death Stars.
Yeah. So
planet consumers.
Yeah, so if they keep making the Death Stars bigger and bigger and bigger, maybe the First Order creates Galactus.
Dun, dun, dun! The ultimate planet destroyer, Galactus.
Yeah, and Snoke becomes the Watcher or something.
Maybe he is a Watcher.
Maybe he is. Bald. Maybe he is the Watcher. Yeah, yeah. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe it becomes Luke.
Ooh, scary stuff. Scary stuff. All right, well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Neverland feedback.
Okay, I have a really fun piece of feedback that I wanted to share with you. This was shared on the Neverland page on Facebook, the like page, and it's from Jeffrey Fishbach, and he says, here at work, listening to episode 115, and just wanted to let you know, Jeremy, that yes, KB Toy Stores, I guess he's what he meant, he put stories. Well, when you say toy, you obviously you want to say story right afterwards, right? But anyways, KB Toy Stores were all over. We had a copy here in my area of Pennsylvania back in the day. I got most of my Kenner Star Wars toys there, well, there and Sears. So yeah, I figured there was KB toy stores everywhere, because I've seen some other photos like, hey, do you remember KB toys? But I don't think my wife has ever seen one anywhere else. So that's why she was the one that's like, do they even have them anywhere else? And I figured there was. So, but thank you, Jeff, for letting us know that you still like to shop at one. I worked at one here seasonally, locally, and then the seasonal store did so well at a local mall that the mall is pretty much non-existent anymore. But the seasonal store went so well that they did give us a permanent store, and I was actually working at that KB toy store when the toys for episode one, you know, Star Wars, The Phantom Menace, came out. And I remember being really excited to go and seeing all the new toys and getting a look at and everything and having no idea that everybody was going to end up hating Jar Jar. But we knew Darth Maul looked really awesome. So yeah, that is our feedback for the week. Now, I have a mission for you guys. Some feedback that I want to hear about. I'm working on kind of a special and a weird and fun kind of wacky episode that's still upcoming, and I want to hear from you on some of the oddball Star Wars items that you used to have collect, you know, like board games. I heard a fun story over at Techno Retro Dads, and I'm going to contact one of them to have him tell us about some fun things he used to do with his Star Wars toys that's kind of off the wall. But yeah, share those weird Star Wars memories for weird things that you remember having, you know, bed sheets or whatever, something that's not the normal thing of, like, you know, toys or video games. But, you know, did you have a particular Star Wars board game? What were your memories of playing it? Stuff like that. Because there's always been kind of goofy board games out there. But I want to hear about it. Get in contact with me. Record an audio if you can. And if you need to share it to with me via Dropbox, that works out great. Or you can try to send it via email, podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. And don't forget that at our website, you can fill out an entire form to just tell me about it via email. I have a whole contact page now, where it makes it a lot easier to just send an email that way. Alrighty, but that's going to wrap things up. I hope to hear from y'all all about your fun Star Wars memories, and make sure you come back next week. Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page,
a link to visit our shop,
and much more.
And please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
Or email us at podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
If you email us a Lost Boy
or Pixie
nickname with a reason why you chose that name, you can become an official Neverlander.
Girls are too clever to get lost, so we are naturally magical pixies.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPcast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support in keeping the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/neverlandpodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Blue Band Productions.
God bless.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.